Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Happy Thursday, Chicago. No John Williams today. John Hansen here filling in until 3 o'clock. And thank you so much for listening here today. You know, normally I judge the weather on my drive on into WGN based on how much of the Hancock Tower I can kind of see. Now, if you could see the whole thing, the weather ain't all that bad. If it's about halfway, it's pretty cruddy out there. I could barely see 15 to 20 stories of the John Hancock Tower on my drive out. And as I look outside the Allstate Skyline studio, I can see exactly half of the Centennial Ferris wheel there on Navy Pier. So a pretty soupy day out there. And obviously these rain showers have been a major story across the area. Huge flooding problems, not only locally along the Des Plaines and the DuPage River and the other ones as well, the Illinois River too, but gosh, the Mississippi River, it looks like it's going to crest even above that historic 1993 flooding we saw in the western parts of the state and eastern Iowa and eastern Missouri. So we're going to talk about that more locally, but we want you to chime in, of course, if you've been experiencing some flooding. Might as well go ahead and read the news click question for you about that flooding. Jump right into it. So if you go to WGNradio.com, we want to know if you've been impacted by the recent floods. It's obviously a big story, but not too many people live right along the rivers. So let us know on the news click if you've had irreparable damages to your personal belongings, if you've had some damage, but it's been salvageable, or if you've been spared. Let us know at WGNradio.com for the news click. Of course, you can join the conversation, 312-981-7200. You can talk in text with that. We're going to talk more about flooding. We're going to talk about the graduated income tax, the bill that passed the Senate. What does that mean? And the Illinois Policy Institute is coming in. You can guess what their stance is on that. They're not too happy, but we're going to argue about that. And I was intrigued about the idea of if people, we often talk about this, are people going to leave Illinois? And, you know, the numbers do show that we're losing more and more people in Chicago and Illinois. But if you're taxed because you make $500,000 and you love that job, or even if you don't, but it pays you that much money, are you really going to leave because the taxes go up $10,000 or $15,000 per year? So we're going to chat about all things. And you also heard us tease that with Steve Bertrand, the idea of composting your human body. But right out of the gate, I've got a really interesting story that, Elif, it almost made you puke when I was telling you about it, right?
That's because I was eating lunch at the time. So, no big deal.
So I guess that's a warning to people out there. If you are currently masticating right now a peanut butter sandwich or something along the lines, either put that sandwich down or just kind of get ready for the story. I find it fascinating, and this would fall into the category of who in the world would buy that. Before we get to that, good afternoon to Lauren Lapke. Now, you're just here for an hour, then you're bouncing out to a bar, right?
Yes, I know. Isn't that funny?
Sounds like the dream day for everyone. Show up, do a couple hours of work, and then go to a bar.
Exactly.
Where are you guys going?
We're going to Cork and Carry at the park before the White Sox game. Thankfully, we get to try out some CH vodka because they are the coolest people in the world.
Yeah.
So it's the best place to actually escape this nasty day.
Yeah, right.
At least it should clear up, so we should actually get the baseball game in.
Yeah, it looks like the rain for the most part seems okay, and hopefully you'll get that. Man, because the Cubs lucked out for being out of town this week. The White Sox, though, have had to deal with so many issues with these rain showers. So I wanted to ask you, Lauren, and Elif, once you kind of gather your thoughts and you feel okay to talk about this story. We got the Derby coming up this weekend, and I know Steve Bertrand will have thoughts on that later on. I don't even know where to begin this story, so I'll just read you the headline and we'll go from there. How Kentucky Derby winners poop, I hope I can say that, I just did, ended up being sold for $200 a nugget. I'll continue by saying droppings from now on.
Thank you. Nugget just makes it way worse.
Actually, a nugget is worse than just saying what it is. So I don't know if you've heard of this story yet, Lauren. This one fascinated me. So the company is called Dixieland Preserves, and for $200, you can get, looks like, two nuggets from 1997 Kentucky Derby and Preakness Stakes winner Silver Charm. So, this is part art and part novelty, according to Dixieland Preserves. He's an artist. He says he works with epoxy resin, a preserving liquid, and he wanted to put encapsulated nuggets into mason jars and sell them, and apparently doing it for $200. So he had this idea, and he's gone to each of the Kentucky Derby winners backwards, like the trainers, whoever owns the horse right now. And not surprisingly, no one wanted to do this. I mean, this is not a normal thing to do. This seems very strange. But he finally went back in the years to horses that were still there, and he could gather this from. And he got to Silver Charm, who won two out of the three races required for the Triple Crown. And he reached out to the farms, and they said that they would be able to do it. So he actually went there and procured it. And luckily, there's no pictures of that process on here. But he did it.
Okay.
He put it into epoxy, and he's selling these things online. And apparently, they're doing okay. People are buying them. And I don't know what... I know we're I love baseball memorabilia. Like, I have an autograph ball from, I think, the 1996 Cubs.
Yeah, an autograph ball, not an autograph,
right,
you know.
Right.
But do you have a baseball player's poop?
No, I don't, of course. And the 1996 Cubs were a terrible team. I think they probably lost 90 games, for all I know. But I cherish that thing. So if you're into horse racing, you know, I guess you could get like a hoof stamp in clay or something. Maybe that would be...
That would be the normal thing.
New revenue stream for the horses. And when I say stream, I...
Oh,
that's a whole other thing. You know what's funny is he actually does some of that for other things too, and that I won't dive into that. But this artist does a lot with that sort of stuff too.
I don't want to hear that.
Yeah,
but I'm thinking of, you know, it's like entertainers of yesteryear. They go to casinos to perform at casinos to make money,
right? Yeah.
Right. So horses back they probably can't go out to stud anymore.
No.
They're past that, so it's just a way to bring in some. It's a revenue creator.
Exactly. So, yeah, if this horse, you know, won two of the three races in 97, he's probably 3 years old then, so he's born in 94. And what? This horse is 25 years. He ain't racing anymore. No one wants any more to, you know, he's not going to create it.
He's not going to run out of that.
Right. Leave it to the host of the Business Lunch to find the angle there that works really well for him. I just can't imagine. But I guess what I'm saying is if you're into horse racing, and some people are into it for one day, and it's this Saturday, and it's the Kentucky Derby, and they put on the big hat and they have the mint julep. But if you're someone that follows this stuff and you want and you are a collector of all these things, I could see why someone would be able to sell this for $200. And I got to say, the guy earned it for $200. That is a lot of effort to find this stuff and to be able to procure it. So I say good for this guy. Lord, do you have any specific memorabilia? You're a big White Sox fan. I know you got to deliver the game ball just a couple weeks ago. Are you a memorabilia person?
I honestly don't have much.
Okay.
I've kept a few foul balls that I've caught throughout the years, but nothing. I don't have autographs or anything like that. I'm one of those people. I don't like to bug athletes or celebrities.
Right, exactly.
So
and this
really
this would really bug the horse, I feel like. I don't think there's a good way to do it without that. And Lauren, while you're mentioning foul balls, you've caught a couple in your life.
Oh yeah, I even had a day where there was about three in one game.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just a lucky spot.
I've probably been to 300 baseball games, never caught a foul ball.
Really?
Almost caught a homer in the bleachers in Wrigley, but I was getting a beer. It actually it clanged against the bleacher seat that I was in. Don't regret it. But did you see the story, Lauren, about the Dodgers fan yesterday at the Dodgers-Giants game last night.
The one with
night.
The food?
Yes! In two consecutive innings!
Yep.
How is this humanly possible? A Dodgers fan lost. So the foul ball, I think it was the second inning, foul ball comes over to him, and what? He drops like a burger and fries, I think.
He's got like a whole tray going on.
Yes.
And he lunges forward, just, of course, tipping forward his tray, and it's going pouring all over the place just to catch the ball.
And we've seen videos like that before, so that's funny enough. But then the next inning, I mean, think of the odds. What happens then? The next inning, the foul ball comes right to him, and that time he drops a pizza, right?
Yeah, he's got something else to eat that he didn't get to actually nibble on. And it was worse because he kind of has a similar situation where he's going forward, but he like goes down, and then he's dragging whoever was sitting next to him down with him. And I was worried about him because he was an older gentleman.
Yeah, but imagine the odds of two baseballs in a row. It's an incredible video. Go online, just Google it. You'll be able to find it. Didn't think we'd get a caller on this one, but Clyde, which is an appropriate name. Clyde, you got a question about the horse droppings.
Yeah, well, how is it verified that the droppings are coming from the famous horses?
Right.
I mean, is there like a notary there or something?
A notary stamp. So I'm on the website. I don't have a great answer for you. But, you know, it says that it's got the droppings. They're preserved. And It says made in Kentucky, too, by the way, which is great. I don't quite know. I guess you just have to trust someone there, and the fact that they're writing articles about it. I imagine the owners of the horse would come forward and say otherwise. Would you purchase this or no?
Oh, no. You're talking about something stupid, and I thought it was funny, and the thought popped into my head.
That's exactly the train of thought I had. Clyde, thank you so much for the call. Texter at the 630 says, not a day to be eating Swedish meatballs for lunch. Thanks a lot. More on 720 after this. WGN, 122 on this Thursday afternoon. John Hanson in for John Williams from the Allstate Skyline Studio. Soupy out there, had more rain on the way, really causing some issues on many Illinois rivers and really the entire upper Midwest experiencing just so many serious issues. And we're getting to record-breaking levels across many of our rivers. Here to chat a little bit about that is Jim Zay. Now, Jim Zay is the chairman of the DuPage County Stormwater Committee. Jim, a busy couple days for you, I imagine.
With the events that happened this weekend, with the snow and then the melt and now the rain, the ground's saturated, and we're seeing all the rivers and streams reaching flood elevations.
So I was seeing some images of the DuPage River. I think it's the DuPage River going through downtown Naperville, and I saw that the Riverwalk was pretty much overrun. What's the status of it now? Are we still seeing rising on that river, or are we beginning to get to the crest?
No, we'll probably see rising probably through Saturday. That's the good thing. The west branch of the DuPage River there in Naperville, they actually designed that river walk to flood during these events. So they're aware of it. The main thing was to have that river walk flood, but not have any buildings or homes flood at that time. So a good design by the city of Naperville to, have a nice amenity, but when the weather's bad and we get flooding, that river walk goes underwater.
Yeah, it's kind of a shocking image to see. We've seen it on the Chicago River as well, but I imagine, like you said, it's designed to do that.
It is, and like you said, it is. When you go there, we were there yesterday looking at it, and the pace that the water goes through, and people got to realize that, it's a flood situation. They've had situations out there where kids think it's fun to jump in a raft or a kayak and go out, and that's the last thing we want. It's the river's moving quickly, and it's dangerous, and people need to know that and stay away from it.
Can you put the past few days in context in terms of whether, I don't know about historical, but if we're there, where are we at compared to other flooding issues that we've had over the past years and decades?
I think that we've gotten between 4.5 and 5.5 inches of rain here. We probably got maybe another quarter to a half an inch of rain today. It's the duration. I mean, when we see historic flooding, like in the summer when we have thunderstorms that come in and sit over an area for, an hour or an hour and a half and dump 12 inches of rain, you get historic. This was just a long duration. The ground's completely saturated. Everybody knows everybody's got puddles all over their yards, and there's just nowhere for the water to go at this point. So, I mean, a lot of our smaller facilities are full at this point, and we're still getting drainage from, everybody's storm sewers. Our larger facilities are, like the Elmhurst Quarry holds about 2.7 billion gallons of water. It's about a third full right now, so we still have plenty of room off of Salt Creek.
Have you been hearing any complaints about basements, things along those lines, damage to property?
We do. I mean, times like this, I'm a homeowner too, and, you get a lot, your sub pumps running nonstop, and, that's the thing people need to know is that, prepare when you see we're going to have long durations of rain like this, that, you have an extra sub pump, get those valuables out of the basement or whatever you can, and we have some issues with backyard flooding, and we know that, and it's alarming to people, but our main issue at Stormwater is make sure your house doesn't flood or your business. So, backyards they complain about, but again, make sure your sub pump's working, try to get your downspouts to push those extensions, push it away from your house, and, make sure all your drains are unclogged and got all the leaves and sticks out of there so it drains down the storm sewer system.
Got to ask, because here in the city, they've told us to kind of ease up on, if you're one of those people that takes 4 showers a day, cut back to 2 or just the 1 will do you. Laundry, maybe wait a couple days. Is that something you're doing in DuPage County, or if not, you see the need and the reason for that?
It does. I mean, basically all the water is going to go to some place. I mean, you're using municipalities, have their waste treatment facilities. That water gets treated. I mean, they're inundated with water, the same like all our stormwater facilities. So, they can only do so much at a time. So, yeah, the more you cut down, the less strain it puts on the entire system because, majority of those systems at some point dump back into the rivers and streams around here. So they need to, if you can, cut back a little bit and, wait for everything to go down.
I live in the city now, but I grew up in DuPage County, and Downers Grove, and one of my distinctive childhood memories, I was a teenager at the time, but it was the 1997 flooding, and it was sort of what you mentioned, Jim, about the kind of the train line of thunderstorms that just wouldn't leave the area. We lost power. I remember my dad running a power line or a extension cord across the street. The neighbors had power. They were trying to fix, you know, get generator power to the sump pump. Anyways, what happened, obviously, was is all the retention ponds filled up, and my parents, being smart that they were, told us not to go in there, and us as kids, we didn't listen to them. Luckily, we were safe, but, I mean, they could never really quite tell me exactly why you shouldn't go swimming in these things. But I imagine, man, if you could express just the danger of any kid or any adult trying to mess around in this water, just so make sure our listeners can express that to their children.
Yeah, I mean, you know, streets, you know, they should stay out of that. I mean, a lot of that is straight water coming out of the storm sewer, so water quality is not good. And the detention ponds, they don't realize when the water on top looks calm, you know, it's on a restricted system. There's only so much water that can come out, so there's an enormous amount of suction. There's pipes down there come anywhere from 12 inches to 24 inches to take the water out of those ponds. So it might look calm on top, but there is an enormous amount of suction that children are in danger if you get in these ponds and retention ponds, because you can get sucked under real quick, and that's just a tragedy. They need to stay away from them. I mean, if you're driving, again, drivers driving, going through a viaduct, it could be 2 inches, it could be 2 feet. So you should really try to not go into those areas and stay away from flooded areas, because, I mean, water is a huge thing, and it's, you don't know the velocity that it travels at, and again, it might look nice, but it's a storm situation for a reason, and you should stay away from those areas.
In other words, if you're a kid listening, your parents are right. You don't need to know why, but there is the reason why. We got a couple dry days ahead, and, you know, people look at the forecast. Of course, dry days are better than wet ones when you're dealing with a flood situation, but the reason why you see rivers continue to rise, I mean, you're still being fed from smaller creeks into bigger rivers. The system kind of takes, what, a few days, a week of dry weather to really flush itself out and get back to normal?
It does. You know, DuPage, the nice thing, not nice thing, but good thing about this storm, we get a lot of our flow from northern Cook and from Lake County, and they didn't have as much rain as we did, so we continue to see that flow come down to the south. So again, the systems will, like I said, they're unrestricted, so those ponds, the creeks and streams, they'll slowly keep going in there. So, you know, we probably haven't encrusted yet at the high part of the storms for this weekend, and we look like we'll be running our facilities through Saturday just because of the flow coming from everywhere else.
It looks like we do maybe have some showers and storms next week, which is not good news. I guess what I'm asking is, you know, for a storm like this, it, you know, it's a couple days, and maybe we'll still be okay to take on a little bit more water early next week?
Yeah, we'll be able, I mean, even yesterday where we got, anytime we get no rain, where we had 6-7 hours, it gives the system a chance to recharge, you know, to get some of the water out. So, I mean, we don't ever, like our large facilities, we don't pump out until we know for sure it's safe and then we have enough, you know, levels go down to a certain level. But, yeah, a little dry weather would help immensely. I know I've got two kids that play high school baseball, and I know everyone's haven't seen a field in a week, so it would be nice to get some dry days.
Yeah, well, we'll do our best with Tom Skillen. We got a connection. Jim Zay, chairman of the DuPage County Stormwater Committee, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
WGN, and a happy Thursday to you. 1:37 on this Thursday afternoon, and big news out of the Illinois legislature yesterday from the House side. Well, no, excuse me, from the Senate side, and maybe the House side next. Man, what a butchered introduction to Heather Sharon for the DailyLine.net. Heather, thank God you are here to help me break down everything that had happened yesterday, and it's continuing to happen. Thanks for joining us on WGN.
I'm happy to be here.
Heather Sharon's the editor of DailyLine.net. You not only do Chicago stuff, but stuff down in Springfield. So walk us through what passed through the Senate yesterday.
Well, it was actually a bunch of bills that set up a vote in the Illinois House on Governor J.B. Pritzker's highest priority, which is the moving the state from a flat income tax where you and I would pay the same as anybody else, regardless if they make a lot more than us or a lot less than us, and that would set income tax rates based on a graduated scale where millionaires and people making more than $250,000 a year would pay more, and people making less than that would pay perhaps a little bit less in state income taxes.
And by the Senate overwhelmingly passing this, it goes to the House, of course, where it has a much more uncertain future. What's the threshold needed? Because this isn't just a Senate House signs it and we're passes it, the governor signs it, and we're done, right? This is a complicated process.
Right. So the flat income tax is actually included in the Illinois Constitution. So this is a constitutional amendment. And if it is, in fact, passed by the House and signed into law by Governor Pritzker, it then sets up a referendum on the November 2020 ballot where voters in Illinois will get to have their say as to whether it should go into effect. So this is just sort of maybe the first step in a really long, complicated process. And also what passed yesterday were a couple of companion bills that would also change the way school districts can levy property taxes, and they tried to change it a little bit from the governor's original proposal to remove what could have resulted in a penalty for married folks.
Are the companion bills things that are also set to be voted on, or are those bills that are passed once they pass the House and signed by the governor, regardless? I mean, there's no input from Illinois residents.
Right. So those bills have a trigger mechanism. They would only go into effect if the constitutional amendment is passed by voters. So they're sort of covering all of their bases here, or at least trying to. So voters won't have to vote on that, but if they do approve the whole package, those bills would automatically go into effect, assuming, of course, that they pass the Illinois House, which, as you mentioned, is less than certain. So we'll have to see.
I mean, the Democrats have big majorities, obviously, in the Senate and the House. Why is it less likely, or at least, less likely than in the Senate to pass?
Well, it's just really complicated, and it's always, difficult for the final, whichever bill that, wherever it starts, it's a two-part process. So it's taking that final vote and sending it to the governor is always sometimes a little bit more difficult than taking that first vote. And there were certainly concerns that people have raised, and that the graduated income tax is the focus of a great deal of consternation from business supporters who are worried that it will hurt Illinois businesses and that it will encourage wealthy Illinoisans to move elsewhere to sort of avoid paying that additional tax. Although I will cite my colleague's work over at the Better Government Association that showed the last time that Illinois raised income tax rates, it was actually more poor people who moved out of the state than wealthier people.
Obviously we know the pros and cons, and actually the folks from the Illinois Policy Institute are going to be joining me after you, Heather, so I know that they've got a list of cons, of course, that they're going to be talking about, and I'm excited to have that discussion. How much money do they think that this is going to raise in terms of kind of chipping away at this giant hole we're in?
Well, Governor J.B. Pritzker says it would raise about $3.4 billion, and that's really what's necessary, according to the governor, to start righting the state's financial ship. And what those funds the governor has proposed using for would be things like paying down the state's huge pension debt, which is just grows astronomically every year, as well as to get out from under the bill backlog that was created by the two-year budget impasse under former Governor Bruce Rauner. We're still paying interest on those past due bills, and that, many people have argued, is really dragging down the state's economy and making people a little bit less certain about the future. So the idea is if we can pay off those bills and get on a clear schedule to repay pension debt, that will help business and give them certainty that additional tax hikes and crises won't follow in the years to come. At least that's the supporters' argument.
$3 billion per year or $3 billion over a certain amount of time?
$3.4 billion in total once it starts in 2020. Oh. That would be an annual deal.
Okay. Yeah, because right now we're looking at deficits for the future fiscal years of $3 billion. So it's not like this is going to be a windfall where all of a sudden we can then spend $1 billion extra on our infrastructure across the state.
No, and that's a whole other fight that's still going on in Springfield, whether there will be a capital bill, how that will be funded. Most suggestions are to raise the gas tax in some way, shape, or form, but that is also a big honking item on the General Assembly's to-do list before the session ends May 31st, and it's already May 2nd, if you can believe that.
Yeah. Heather, thanks for at least getting the X's and O's for us. I really appreciate it, okay?
Anytime. Thanks, John.
Heather Sharon, editor of thedailyline.net. Okay, Adam Schuster is going to join us next from the Illinois Policy Institute. We'll be talking about this, and we'd like your thoughts. We already got a text in. Won't this make more people want to leave the state? I imagine Adam and other folks will have opinions on that. So do I. Coming up on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. We were just talking off the air. We should probably just talk on the air. Adam Schuster, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Adam Schuster is with the Illinois Policy Institute. We were talking about this this tax rate, and I wanted to just read this headline because I know you'll appreciate this, Adam. This was from the Sun-Times. I thought this was an excellent headline. Stairway to Heaven longer than Senate debate before historic tax vote. I imagine you folks don't like that, right? You want a little debate on this thing.
That's right. We think that this thing was rammed through the Senate. There was very limited debate, and it was really passed on a completely party-line vote. And hopefully the Illinois House will have a more robust debate and ultimately reject this plan.
Why do you want it rejected?
Ultimately, this is a plan that's not going to solve any of Illinois' problems, despite the claims from the governor. And what it will do is crush an already struggling economy. We were 48th in the nation for jobs growth over the most recent year we have data for. We're already lagging our neighboring states, and further tax hikes on an already struggling economy are just going to make those problems worse. And it's not going to raise the amount of revenue they say it will, or nearly enough to solve our problem.
How does it stop job growth? Is it about new people coming here and trying to open up businesses, saying, I'm going to stay away from Illinois? Is it about current businesses leaving? And walk us through why you think it's going to kill job growth here.
Yeah, so it's a combination of things. The first thing to know is that any tax that's graduated, meaning you pay a higher rate for higher levels of income, reduces the return on investment for your investments in education, but also capital goods. So companies are less likely to make those investments, and individuals are less likely to work extra hours or go back to school, take the education to earn that money because it reduces the return on it. You're paying a higher tax rate the more you earn. The Tax Foundation, which ranks business climates, said that this would take us from 36th in the nation to 48th in the nation for a small business tax climate. And so ultimately, that means fewer jobs. It means this makes it harder for companies to hire people. And that's especially true when you consider the fact that this is going to disproportionately hit small businesses. A lot of people don't realize this, but many small businesses in the state of Illinois pay taxes at the individual income tax rates on pass-through income. And this would capture at least 25% of those businesses and over 75% of all small business income.
One interesting note I saw in the press release you guys had was the idea that, okay, if you put this in place and, people under making, I don't know the exact numbers in front of me, under 125 or whatever it is, 4.78, and then it goes up to 7.78, I think, on the higher tax brackets, whatever it is, that even if you put that in place, that can be a way to lure people in thinking that they will pay lower taxes over time, or even that they'll stay steady. But in terms of when you get this graduated rate, that they just mess with it so much that eventually everyone ends up paying a lot more. That's what you guys contend.
That's right. So eliminating the flat tax protection in the Constitution is giving politicians more power to raise your taxes. It makes it easier for them to raise taxes because they can do it little bit by little bit by targeting individual groups at one time. They can play with the brackets and play with the rates so that they don't have to hit everybody with it. And that makes it easier for them to do it sort of one at a time. And that's not just a theoretical argument. This is exactly what's happened in other states. So the last state to switch to a progressive tax from a flat tax was Connecticut. And they made all the same promises there that it was going to help lower property taxes, that it was going to balance the budget, and that the middle class would pay less. Well, in fact, what happened is that the middle income tax rate has gone up by 13% since they made the switch back in 1996. They've had unbalanced budgets in 12 out of the last 15 years, and their property taxes have continued to rise. And before the switch, Connecticut's economy was outperforming the national average. After the switch, they've been underperforming the national average. So every promise that was made in Connecticut is identical to the promises that are being made here, and every one of those promises was broken.
We got about $15 billion in unpaid bills. We have a $3 billion budget deficit, which means the hole is just going to get deeper. Okay, if we're not raising revenue, what are we doing? I mean, and you could say cuts, but where? I mean, we need some specifics here.
Yeah, well, I've got specifics. First, I'll let you know, go to illinoispolicy.org. We have a plan called Budget Solutions 2020. It's a five-year fiscal plan that would immediately balance the budget through structural spending reforms and eliminate that debt you're talking about.
What do you mean by structural spending reforms?
Yeah, so what I mean is things that don't actually hurt the services that people get. So it doesn't cut education. It doesn't cut social services. What it does is look at the fastest growing areas of our budget, which are pensions and government worker health insurance. So since the year 2000, pensions have grown by 677% spending on pensions. It takes up over a quarter of the state budget annually, and that requires a constitutional amendment as well. But what we think it's fairer for us to be talking about reducing spending on things that aren't providing value to the residents of Illinois, like pensions and like government worker health insurance, in a way that still leaves in place very generous compensation packages for our government workers.
Well, isn't that just shifting the burden from people that have current jobs paying their income tax, and that may hurt some more people, but at least they are currently employed, versus retirees who have paid into systems that they were guaranteed? Isn't that just shifting the balance to retirees? Do they have to take care of this?
The great thing is that our pension plan does not require cutting a dime from a pension check that anybody's already receiving.
Okay.
And it would keep preserve every promise we've made to current workers. So that means if you're currently promised a $3,500 monthly check when you retire, that amount will never go down. All it does is reduce the growth rate and future increases in those pension benefits.
Okay.
And by doing that, we can save between $1 billion and $1.5 billion per year on pensions, and actually eliminate our pension debt faster than planned under current law. So paying less and getting rid of the debt faster.
Well, $1.5 billion sounds great, but it's still not there yet. So what else?
Well, so it's several different things. So it's the pensions is a big part of it, but it's also putting a pause on the automatic raises for government workers that we've been giving out. So they call them step increases, where you get paid automatically more just for sitting in your chair longer, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd put a pause on that. Our state workers are currently the second highest paid in the nation after adjusted for cost of living. And it would ask state workers to pay for a share of their own health insurance costs that's more in line with what people in the private sector pay for their health insurance. They would still have very generous health insurance plans. They'd pay for about 40% of the total cost between out-of-pocket costs and premiums, but it would actually enable us to save about $500 million in the state budget with that reform.
Don't some people that work in government sacrifice some money by not going to the private sector and then making them pay more in terms of their health insurance for in line with what people in the private sector pay? Isn't that penalizing them for going into state government work?
It's a common argument, and unfortunately, the data doesn't really bear it out. I should let you know, I worked for the state of Illinois for a little bit over 3 years. I'm very familiar with what my own compensation was, and I've also looked at the data in terms of census data and what Illinois workers make compared to state workers in other states. And like I said, second highest in the nation once you adjust for cost of living. Mm-hmm. So we can still have very generous compensation packages for our government workers. And actually, what we would do is, rather than those automatic increases, we'd have like a merit bonus system where you get paid based on merit, and that it wouldn't add to the pension debt the same way that automatic salary increases do. And we would the third part of the plan is structural reforms to our education system that would allow the state of Illinois to slow the rise in education spending, because we're currently planning on spending $350 million each year, increases $350 million, and instead we would grow that at the rate of inflation, but we would cut down on the bureaucracy in our education system, and that could free up about $650 million annually that could go into students and classrooms without more state spending. And the way you do that is through reorganizing the number of school districts we have. The reason that's so important is right now the number of administrators in our schools has been growing 4.5 times faster than the student body population. So that's just pure waste, and it doesn't benefit students.
What if someone says to you, cutting education is the worst thing you can do right now? I know you sort of dove into that about administrators having too many of them in general, but I mean, cutting education seems to be like the last thing that we should be doing, but I guess you're saying cut it in the right places.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, first of all, let's not cut education, let's grow it more slowly. Grow it at the rate of inflation, but also throwing more money into an inefficient and broken education system doesn't benefit students, right? It just lines the pockets of these six-figure bureaucrats, which we have the most of in the nation. We're the only state in the nation that spent over $1 billion on general administrative costs. To put that in perspective, California, which has about double our student body population, spent a third less on administration than we have.
Okay, but hold on. All right, so you say that you have bloated salaries in administration. I don't need to dive into that, but okay, let's say they are bloated. Let's say you have administrators making $200,000 to $300,000 a year, which I know there are some when you look at the...
Paraday, a South Chicago suburb, was making $440,000 a year. Yeah.
Fine. Sure. Okay, so we're going to cut their pay or cut their jobs, but in order to protect people making over $500,000 from having to pay a little bit more in taxes?
This isn't about protecting rich people, the progressive income tax fight. I think that's one of the biggest myths out there, and it's really sort of just a distraction that proponents of this plan use to avoid the real debate. What this is about protecting everybody in the state. So there's almost 300,000 people out of work right now in the state of Illinois, people who are looking for work but don't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're telling you is that this will make it harder for them to find a job because it's going to make it harder for small business owners who create about 2/3 of new jobs in Illinois to employ people. And it also, when we look around at other states, it means lower wage growth, right? So this is a plan that's bad for everybody. It's not about protecting people making over $250,000 a year or $1 million a year, whatever, you know.
Yeah, whatever number you want to make.
Yeah, it's about protecting the general level of prosperity and economic growth and wage growth for everybody in the
state. Last question. Okay, can't there be a compromise? Can't we have some sort of elevated, is there any sort of graduated tax you guys would accept if it also came across with some of the educational cuts you're proposing? Is there a way for us to reach common ground on this?
What I would say is that if what your real goal is to reduce taxes for the middle class and those who are working to strive to get into the middle class, then what you should be looking at is A, reforms to cut property taxes, and B, you could look at just increasing the standard deduction in the Illinois income tax.
So you're
code.
Not okay with any raising in revenue?
Well, the ultimate problem here is that if tax hikes worked, why are we talking about another one? We've done two in the last 8 years. The 2011 tax hike was supposed to solve our problems. The 2017 tax hike was supposed to solve our problems. And since those tax hikes, not only did they not solve our problems, our debt burdens and deficits have grown since those tax hikes. So we're long past the point of diminishing returns when it comes to tax hikes. And at this point, it's just hurting the economy. And it is driving more people out of the state.
Adam Schuster, we're out of time. We did talk more than the Senate talk, though. I will say that. It was a good debate. It's an issue that deserves a lot of time. Thanks for your time.
Thank you,
Adam.
Very much.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
WGN and a happy Thursday afternoon to you. 2:08 in the afternoon on this kind of soupy Thursday afternoon across the city of Chicago. Can't see much of the tops of buildings. Can only see about half of the Ferris wheel at Navy Pier, if that gives you some perspective. Speaking of perspective, we're always great to hear Walter Jacobson and your perspective. And, you know, Walter, I get to play your perspectives often on an early Sunday morning if I fill in for Dave Plyer. And always, I just want to say, I wish I could talk to Walter a little bit more about this. You're sitting in the chair now. Walter, thanks for coming on with us.
Let's talk. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's an honor. Having grown up watching you, you're a legend in the business, and to chat politics with you is something else. But your recent perspective had to do with Lori Lightfoot. Has there been a more surprising mayoral election in your since you've been covering Chicago politics?
Not in my experience. I don't think anybody who was really keyed into Chicago politics expected her to win this race. I think she won it not only by surprise, but by Alderman Burke's trouble with the federal government. You know, there was a feeling around town leading up to the election, the first election, and then also through the runoff, that Alderman Burke was in trouble, that he was being accused by the FBI of attempted extortion, and that kind of cast a shadow over everything. It sort of had a way of focusing our attention on misbehavior in Chicago politics. And Lori Lightfoot came in saying she's going to change things. She was a very, very tough, small, 5'1" yeah. tall, but hugely, difficultly tough. And she just went on and said things. I'll read you some of her quotes.
Yeah, please.
We didn't expect that.
Yeah, I got to say that the anti-incumbent fever across the country has obviously been permeating for a few years. But I think you're right. I think the Burke thing, you know, it's always been machine versus new politics. Who do you want in office? I just think it heightened it. It brought everything, every candidate then. You know, I think the debate between whether Tony Preckwinkle was part of the machine or not part of the machine, that was always percolating underneath. But the Burke thing really brought it front and center for every candidate.
Yeah, and do you remember some of the things that she said as she was running toward that election day? Let me read you a couple of quotes. I was very surprised. You know, she's very forceful. She's a former prosecutor. We could talk about that, too, because that's mm-hmm. a good thing to have in City Hall. But here are just a couple of them. She said over and over and over again that, quote, "I'm going to be a boss who holds people accountable. Chicago aldermen need to understand that, and they need to understand responsibility. Having to kiss the ring of an alderman or contribute to a campaign to get access to a city service is," she said, "fundamentally wrong, a real problem." And you know, she went on, "Criminal misuse of zoning and city licenses. That's got to go, period. I was elected to build a government where you don't have to give to get, where you don't have to pay a bribe to get a permit, When the FBI raided the offices of Alderman Burke, the other alderman, she said, scattered like cockroaches. And about Burke himself, Lightfoot's quote, "Burke is utterly corrupt, the way he exploited his power and position." Smack! She said that stuff right in the face of people in the city, the big shots in City Hall. "And when I'm the mayor, any alderman who aligns himself with Burke, I'm going to shine a light on him to make sure he's exposed." That's tough talk. You think back. The only person who came close to that in a mayor-elect position was Jane Byrne, but it was not that to this degree.
Well, it's great to talk about that during an election, but then you got to work with these people.
That's right.
Is that going to be tough going forward, or she scared them enough?
She better be careful. I think they're sitting there for her in case she tries to go too far. You know, her signature program is getting rid of this very well-known, but not really well-understood, alderman prerogative.
Mm-hmm.
Words that people don't really latch on to because they're not simple enough. What it means, simply, is that the alderman in Chicago, the alderman of each ward, has total control over what happens in that ward from a city government standpoint. That includes housing, affordable housing, public housing. Just imagine what aldermen on the far northwest side and the far southwest side will think about having to give up their control over what kind of public housing is going to be built in their neighborhood.
You know, everyone's on the train that that's a bad thing, and that seems to be the growing sentiment amongst people. But I don't know if people really have thought through all the permutations of that. I mean, if you give every decision to the entire city council as opposed to a ward kind of having a little bit more prerogative in each, you know, district, I don't know if it's a good thing to take local issues and bring them to the whole city all the time. I mean, that's the one thing that you love about having an alderman, at least how I feel, is if the street light is out, I know who to call. If the pothole isn't there, I know who to call. But coming along with that is their ability to kind of help control what happens in a neighborhood. Is that such a bad thing?
No, it's a good thing in the sense that you describe it. It's good that the people in the neighborhood get to have a say. And the aldermen, presumably, are reflecting the viewpoints of the people in the neighborhood. It's a bad thing in the sense, not in the sense, it's a bad thing, period, that it is what leads to the money question. An alderman in charge of licensing, building permits, and all the things that happen in a community can and do, and this is what Ed Burke is being accused of, extort from, I'm not saying he's guilty, of course.
Right, of course.
We don't know.
Alleged, right.
He hasn't even really been indicted yet. But that's where the money is. That's where the alderman can say to a big developer, "You want to build a high-rise in my ward? I'll take a little campaign contribution." And there's an awful lot of money that's involved in that. So in that sense, it's a good idea. And look, it got Lori Lightfoot elected. I think that's what the people want or say they want.
Yeah.
They're, you know, the alderman, she's not saying that the alderman will have to give up control of everything. Just the ones that are seriously
corrupt.
Fraught. Yeah,
right.
I hate to use the word corrupt if I don't know it's corrupt. But
true.
But fraught with the potential of corruption.
Right, because corruption, you know, when we say corruption, that obviously has a legal designation.
Right.
And people kind of throw that word around perhaps more than they should.
Right.
Because right now developers can contribute to campaigns, those sorts of things. And that's not necessarily illegal, but it certainly does influence decision making along the line.
You know, I think in the past 20 years there have been 40-some Chicago aldermen who have been indicted, convicted, and many sent to jail for all this kind of stuff.
Do you think a lot of it is just because of, well, first of all, the old machine, but also because of this prerogative? It lends aldermen, they're more susceptible to that sort of thing because they do wield that power.
Yeah.
What do you think about having a prosecutor or a former prosecutor in the mayor's chair?
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting, if not a lot of fun, or I would say, yes, a lot of fun as well for people in the news business as we are, because we're going to be seeing some very exciting things. She may have to tone it down a degree, but she's got them on the run right now.
As a former newsman, what's it like covering a mayor who will give you those quotes? Obviously, you were there when Jane Byrne was there, and she was very quotable.
Yeah.
It makes the job more exciting, more fun, I guess you could say.
I sure agree with that. I like it. I like what she says. I didn't know too much about Lori Lightfoot until she got involved in this campaign. I, in fact, have never met her. I've read everything she's talked about as much as I could, and I've watched her on the campaign trail, and I get increasingly impressed by her straightforwardness, her willing to respond to questions, and most importantly, I think, her fearlessness in confronting the big shots in City Hall right to their faces and telling them what she's going to do. Can she do it? Wait and see. Yeah. Listen to WTN. Yes. Read the newspapers.
I think it's also, we'd be remiss if not mentioning first African-American woman, first LGBT person in that position. That's big for Chicago. I mean, Chicago is a city of firsts, and we like to break barriers. It gives me at least a certain sense of pride knowing that she's in that office. And I imagine for Chicagoans, whether you voted for her or not, it represents a nice change in the city.
Yeah, very good.
Excellent.
Very good.
All right, Walter, thanks for extending on your perspective. We really appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me.
You can come in any time, by the way, Walter. If this red light's on and I'm in here, you can come on in.
Be happy to do it.
All right, thanks so much. Walter Jacobson, of course, you can hear his perspectives all the time here on WGN. WGN 720 WGN, a happy Thursday afternoon, everyone. Thanks so much for spending some time with me. I'm John Hanson, in for John Williams, until 3 o'clock. And, of course, then we got Rowan Anna after me. And then the lineup continues with that White Sox game a little bit later on as well. And as of right now, still scheduled. I don't see any rain right now. I think we're okay. And we'll wait to get the full forecast from Steve Bertrand in about 9 minutes or so. Just kind of cloudy and cold and a little foggy. It's been foggy all afternoon. I wanted to read a few of the comments that we got, and feel free to call on in. I want to hear what you think about this proposed tax hike, the graduated tax hike. I shouldn't even call it a tax hike, because technically folks that make under $100,000 or so are going to actually see their state taxes presumably go down a little bit, just a little bit. So I want to walk through the tax brackets. I've had actually a few people texting in wondering if their taxes specifically are going up or are going down. I'm going to have to find it. Elif, maybe you can look for the article that lays it all on out for me. The policy one didn't have it, and I think I threw the other one away. So I'll look for that one. But generally, if you make under $100,000, your tax rate right now, which is right around 4.9%, will go down ever so slightly. Not too much. You won't impact it too much. And it really takes till about $250,000 for you to see your taxes go up a little bit, and even up into the $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 for you to feel and get up to that 7% tax rate. And again, you're right around 5%, and it's flat across the board. Some interesting perspectives on here. This has to do with whether people will leave the state or not. The 847 says, I retired 16 months, and I'm out of here. Now, that's interesting. I imagine they're going to tax your income as you're right now. The state of Illinois doesn't tax your retirement income, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know if that tax would go up. I'll look into that. 815 had the same question that the Illinois Policy Institute had. That is, what is going to keep the legislature from raising the rates in the future, which is something that the Illinois Policy Institute also argued against. The idea being that, it's sort of like the book you had as a kid. I don't know if anyone else read it, but if you give a mouse a cookie, he's going to want a glass of milk, was a book that I read. And that's sort of the theory, is that if because right now you're protected by the Constitution in Illinois that we get a flat tax. Well, if you open that, not to make reference here with the situation, but you open the levees and the floodgates would open up and they could change that. And the texter goes on to say what they're talking about now is fine, but Springfield loves to spend more money than they have, meaning they will raise income rates and then change the brackets. 312 says the tax is going after the people that can most afford accountants and accounting firms. They'll be able to find a way to wiggle out of it, including the governor, who figured out to remove toilets from his mansion to lower his property tax. And we know who's next in line, those of us in the middle class. Couple amens I got while the Illinois Policy Institute were talking. 815 wants to know, I make $165,000 a year. What will I pay it in taxes? And again, this plan has just gone through the Illinois Senate. It's got to go through the House by a majority there. And then you get to vote on it. I mean, this is only to get this on the ballot for whether the Constitution will be amended. So ultimately, y'all are going to make this decision, at least if you live in the state of Illinois. So basically, it looks like that if you make $165,000, you'll be taxed the normal rate on your first $100,000. And then after that, you will go to a rate, the current rate, 4.95%. And eventually, you'll tap out at 7.99. I don't know exactly the bracket for 165. I'll have to look into that. But that's an interesting perspective there as well. They ask for a few more questions on the line. A lot of people saying this guy makes sense. And a lot of people chiming in about whether state workers make too much money. But let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Al. Al, you're on 720 WGN. What's your thought here on this graduated rate?
Well, thanks for taking the call. My opinion is that I think that they should be raising taxes on everybody, not just the ones who make more than $250,000, because the state has huge, huge debts. And if they're not willing to cut expenses, they got to raise the money, or else
we'll dig the hole deeper.
Go into bankruptcy.
Yeah,
and further,
even
though I'm retired, I think they ought to tax retirement income at the same rates as everybody else.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Al. It seems like you want change and you're willing to bear the brunt of it, too.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'm on the far right, but I recognize that we have a math problem in this state, and that we can't, we need a lot of money to pay the past due debts and to pay the pensions, which we can't get out of.
So
I think you have to, that everybody has to bear the burden.
Al, you mentioned raising the rates for everybody, and do you still propose that we keep the flat tax, or are you okay with uber rich or people making over $500,000 can pay a little bit more of their fair share?
I'm fine with that, but I really think the lower brackets, the people making $150,000, $150,000, I think that the rates ought to be higher for them by at least a percentage or maybe 2 percentage points. Because the state needs the money.
Al, I appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I think that what Al is doing there, that I think that all of us need to do a little bit, is say, look, I agree. There's no agreeing or disagreeing. The state's broke. The state is out of money. In fact, well out of money. We owe $15 billion in paying contractors, paying private companies that we didn't pay while we didn't have a budget for those years. Not only that, then the budget itself right now continues to drain money. So, yes, we're broke. That is a flat thing. That is an obvious thing. Then the question becomes, are you willing to pay more money in order to fix it? Are you going to stay here in the state, continue to work and live in the state? Are you willing to shoulder some of that burden? And we did the, you know, just a couple months ago, Lakeshore Drive. You know, we have the pavement issues, the concrete issues. We've got bridges crumbling across this state. We've got roadways. I mean, the money doesn't come out of nowhere. And yes, you can cut out of the state budget. And there's certainly arguments to be made. And the Illinois Policy Institute did a great job outlining where maybe some of those cuts can be had. And certainly there's discussions to be had about where you can cut those sorts of things. But I think that it's foolish to believe that it's just going to happen out of thin ice. I think out of thin air, everyone, I think, needs to do it. Some more text coming in. Well, what are we seeing here? The machine broke on me, of course, when we do that. The problem with every time we raise taxes, this is from the 708, is it never goes to pay off what it's supposed to. I agree with your caller that if they raised everyone's taxes one percentage point and it was mandated it to reduce the pensions, that would be acceptable. Yeah, you had me till the pensions thing. I don't understand how we can take away, and in fact, the Illinois Supreme Court has ruled, in fact, unanimously on this, that you can't take away the pensions that have been guaranteed to people, whether they're currently employed right now or whether that they're already retired. It was a unanimous ruling. I don't see any way of that changing. Pensions are protected by the state constitution, and any challenge to them doesn't seem to be going anywhere. It's a fascinating read, that ruling, by the way, by the Illinois Supreme Court, where they ruled that the Illinois legislature has been warned since 1914 that we would eventually have a pension problem, and they said that it's not fair to have pensioners pay the brunt of this thing. So I agree everyone's taxes are going to go up, but I don't know if cutting expenses from pensioners is a fair idea. Let's go to Jim. Jim, you're on 720 WGN.
Yeah, am I on now?
Yeah, you're on, Jim. Yeah, you're talking about what I'm talking about.
My question, I didn't catch that, but my question is related to the pensions, and if I understand the debt, primarily the debt is because of the huge pensions that we're paying to, you know, government workers and school teachers, et cetera, and that they're saying that they can't change that and convert it to a different pension system because it's in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you're going to take the attempt to change the tax system by changing the
Constitution, you know, yeah.
The Constitution, so why can't you do that in pensions and start correcting what is the problem today with the pension system that's putting us in all of this debt? And as a matter of fact, if you look at the pension system, and I'm familiar with, or somebody told me about what's going on in the school pension system, that they get 80% of their income on an annual basis when they retire, and then they get a 3% compounded annually every year. Now, if you look at a person that was had a pension, let's say $80,000, they were making $100,000, and then that's then they get a 3% compounded yearly. If they live long enough, in about 15 or 20 years,
right,
that's going to double.
Well, Jim, I got to ask. We got to go break for news, and I appreciate the phone call. You know, the thing with the pension, look, obviously, and even the Supreme Court, Illinois Supreme Court, said if you want to change the pension situation, change the Constitution. No one's going to vote for that. There aren't the votes in there to get that ballot measure on the ballot. You can't touch the pension situation. But I agree with you that it certainly is our biggest cost right now. But I just have never thought it's fair that if you guarantee, if someone's employed either as a teacher, as a state worker, and they're told this is what they're going to get out of at the end, I don't think it's fair to change that up midstream. And I think a lot of people agree with that. Unfortunately, the pensions are a huge issue. So it's a complicated issue. But I do agree with Jim's point that, you know, if you are able to change the Constitution for this, that should at least be considered. I just don't think there's any chance of that happening. Yes. 720 WGN. Hey, in just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Dr. Charles Montorio Archer. I've chatted with him a bunch. He's the president and CEO of One Hope United. They're a great organization, and they got a great event that I'll be at tomorrow. We'll talk to him in just a few moments. But, man, the phone lines are lighting up. The text lines are, too, about the pensions and the proposed gradual income tax rise that's going to be happening if the House approves it and then you approve it as voters to amend the Constitution. Let's go to Nikki. Nikki, you're on WGN. Your thoughts?
Good afternoon. My thoughts are no matter how much we give our government, they seem to spend more. They don't look at their budget and think, all right, these people already have one of the highest taxes in the United States as far as their real estate. We pay one of the highest gasoline prices, and they're talking about raising the taxes on that, even though it's very high. And then the caller comes on and says everybody should get an equal increase in what they're going to be paying. And I'm thinking, what about these people who are living on a low pension? Not everybody gets the pensions that the government workers and the teachers get.
Right, right. Some people are working on their own private savings and they don't get any pension. They had a 401 maybe that isn't as much as they thought it would be, or they had expenses, medical expenses. Yeah, there's a lot of people out there that cannot afford a percentage raise in their taxes. My question for you, Nikki, is, all right, so I agree with you that if you give the state more money, they're going to spend more money. That's just the way it goes. Would you be okay, and this is something that people have proposed, for every dollar, let's say, that you raise in taxes, there's an equivalent cut on the other side of the ledger so you can attack this problem faster. Would you be okay with that?
I don't understand. What is
so the idea? It's a little complex. What you got to think is, let's say we tax you individually, Nikki. I'm coming right for you for some reason. Okay. I know you don't like that already, but let's say I get a dollar from you. I would only be allowed to do that as a legislature if then somewhere on our expenses, our long list of billions of dollars of expenses, I took away a dollar in expenses. So in effect, we've netted $2. I've gotten one from you, but I've also cut. And what you do is that the only way you're able to gain that revenue from you and the rest of the taxpayers is if there's an equivalent cut. Are you okay with that, or are you just not okay with any new revenue gain, new taxes?
No, I'm okay with that. That doesn't sound like a bad idea. But they're talking already about raising so much more money.
Yeah.
And when is it ever going to end?
That's a great question.
They keep on finding more and more ways. Now it's going to be online betting. It's going,
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Nikki, you got a great bunch of questions. We got some other callers. We appreciate you joining on 720. It's a great point. Let's go to line one. Joy, you're on 720 WGN.
Hi. You seem like a very nice man, but very, very illiterate when it comes to teacher pension.
Okay.
Teachers don't get Social Security.
Right.
We put money into a retirement fund every paycheck. The state of Illinois was supposed to take that money, save it for us, and then give it to us when we retired.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the state of Illinois decided to use that money in a variety of other packages, and now we have a crisis.
So,
not because the teachers pay. I mean, we don't get Social Security.
So, Joy, my mom's a retired public school teacher of 35 years. I think you should get every dollar that you've earned and you were guaranteed to get. Where was I illiterate on that?
Well, you let that guy make it sound like...
Oh, yeah, well, I let other people make those claims. Oh, no, but, Joy, I agree. I think that anything that we told you you were going to get and you worked hard to get, you've earned, and that
you
is protected.
Put in for. I mean, you
yes,
put in...
Yes, you're right.
I mean, that's your money.
Yeah, exactly. It's not
for
like
my
it's...
money,
yeah.
actually.
Right, no, yeah. You pay into that. You pay, what, 10% into of your salary into that? I think it varies. You
yes,
don't get
yes.
Social Security at the end of the
no.
day. So, yeah, nope. I think to try and solve this crisis by... throwing teachers under the bus is about the worst thing that you can do.
Well, but you also are like, you know, you may not get a 401 or whatever from your business. So, you know, you're on your own. Well, that's because we were promised
mm-hmm.
that if we did this job and we put in that money, it would be there for us. Companies, a lot of people, you know, people, everyone pays into Social Security. You will get something.
Yep.
They're taking your money. So people who act like... you know, they were screwed over because
yeah.
they're not getting a government pension. Just makes me crazy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No,
Joy,
it's a heated issue, and I appreciate the phone call, and I appreciate all your work as a teacher. And yeah, we get a lot of questions like, well, private companies change their pension plans all the time. Why can't we change the states? Well, the state has said in its constitution that you can't. Private businesses can't take away the pension you've already earned, the money that you have stashed away, but they can certainly adjust it moving forward, saying that they're not going to have a pension anymore for folks, their new folks that are employed there. So yeah, there's a distinction between government workers and a distinction between private businesses. But it's the Constitution of Illinois. Now, if you're going to change it for taxes, yeah, perhaps you should change the pension situation in the Constitution, the Illinois Constitution. But as of right now, I don't think you got the votes for it. I do think you have the votes elsewhere. Kevin, really quickly, you're on WGN. You're going to have the last word on this one.
Yes, hello. This is Kevin. I agree with the woman that just spoke. The problem was when Madigan and all of them, and they promised to take that money and use that pension money. Instead, they took the pension money and used it for other things. And now we're in this crisis. And that's where it all stems from the beginning. If Madigan would have done what he was told to do, and everybody else, we wouldn't be in this situation. But as the woman just stated, they took the money that was promised that we socked away and put away. I'm a firefighter, police officers. We don't get Social Security. It's the exact same situation.
Yeah.
We pay into our pension, and that money was supposed to be put off to the side for when we retire, but they used that money, and now we're in this deficit.
Yeah. Hey, Kevin, I appreciate the phone call. Two of my brothers are firefighters, too. I agree with you on that one. I'm all about keeping pensions as what you've been guaranteed. I think Frank has the best solution, though. Really quickly, Frank, how are we going to fix this problem here in the state government?
Enforce the rules of the road.
Okay.
I'm a professional truck driver. I'm on the highways all day long and the streets. It's been raining for the past 3 days. People driving without lights. That's a law. That's in the book of the rules of the road.
So you think we should just fine more people if they don't got their lights on when the wipers are on?
That's right.
I'm fine with that. Amen. If you don't
turn signal.
If you don't use your turn signal, that's a $20,000 fine. That's going to help us pay this thing down.
No, you know, I hope you're not making fun of me.
I'm not serious. I'm making fun of the idea. No, I'm not making funny. I wish people drove more safely, and there's serious implications about that.
But
I don't think you're going to cut into $15 billion.
You don't have to hire any more
yeah.
state police. They all got cameras in their cars. You see a guy switching lanes. You don't put the turn signal on. You pull him over
yeah.
at a minimum fine of $25.
$2,500, I think
he
you said.
He can't get away from that fine because he's on camera.
Yeah. Frank, I got to say, I agree with the idea of fining people a lot of money for breaking basic rules that are happening in our state. I'm just saying, I don't think it's going to solve our crisis here. We are going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to talk to Dr. Charles Montorio Archer, president of One Hope United here on 720 WGN. One Hope United, thank you so much. I'm sorry to keep you on hold. I've learned that in radio, you ask people if they want to pay more taxes, you get people to call in.
Well, you know something, John? I think that you just had a very lively call of people who are really concerned.
Yes.
So it was very good to listen in on.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk about One Hope United, a great organization. You're the new CEO, breaking a lot of barriers doing that as well. Talk about the organization. I mean, it's been in place for a long time.
Yes. One Hope United began as a home for children over 120 years ago and has been investing in children and families ever since. Our team of nearly 800 talented professionals work along in areas of early learning and education, counseling, foster care, and other support services to over 9,000 children and families in Illinois, Florida, Wisconsin, and Missouri.
Yeah, you guys, you know, I go to your website, onehopeunited.org, and you lay out your mission and your vision correctly. You know, for people that, you know, hear these sorts of things of organizations doing great things, and we got a lot of them in Chicago, I wonder if you could, like, kind of walk through the specifics of the children that you work with, you know, that one-on-one experience or the group settings that they're getting, and why it really makes a difference in their lives.
I think we all can kind of attest to the fact that there has been one person or multiple people who have touched our lives individually throughout our lives to get us to this point. And at One Hope United, kind of developing a comprehensive, individualized service plan and service connection with each family and each individual is how we're able to do the support and services for all 9,000 in four states.
So, you guys, talk about the different levels of care, because, I mean, I think that sometimes we support great organizations that kind of take care of one piece of the pie when you're talking about care. You guys are very comprehensive in what you do.
Yes, you know, when we meet people where they are, we try to carry them through their own journey of life from point A to point Z. So the moments where we meet families are, for instance, where maybe it's a young mother who doesn't have a support system and comes to One Hope in order to get the support that she desires. Maybe it's a family that's experiencing abuse in the home and the children might have to be relocated and either go into foster care in the journey to adoption if that becomes an option, or if there's a teen who's just living in a community where there's violence and they need a safe haven or a place where they can find their individual hope and safety net to go through life. Those are the type of connections or the entry points where One Hope meets families and individuals.
How can people help? I mean, people are listening here, and I think everyone, you know, most people listening have a good heart. They may not have all the dollars that they can give. They might have time. I mean, what are you looking for from Chicagoans or people in the suburbs or wherever they're listening to WGN right now? What can we do to help you get to where you need to go with your mission?
I think, you know, touching on the point of going to visit our website to see what we do, see how our mission aligns with what your personal interest is, the greatest thing that anyone can do for us is to come and work with us, come and help us live our mission forward. And if you're not looking for employment and you know someone who is, make a referral to this organization, because we're always looking for people who care about our mission but also want to see the communities that they live in and the communities that other people live in kind of thrive and move forward. It's always helpful that if you have time to volunteer, we do have volunteer opportunities at some of our locations that just help us as well. But the other thing that I've also found to be very valuable is when people support us, not just with their time and talent, but with their resources. There are a lot of people, particularly in Chicago and in Orlando and Florida and other areas, where they have the resources and they figure that because I can't invest 100 hours with my resources, then I don't want to get involved. You know, we have people who've donated $100 to people who've donated $1,000, and each donation collectively helps us live our mission, and it's one of the reasons why this Friday, tomorrow, we'll be having our Hope in Action event where we get a chance to honor not just people who are doing positive, amazing things in the community, but also we get to re-energize and connect with other advocates who want to see this mission live for another 125 years.
You mentioned tomorrow night. I'm excited. I'm pumped. I'm going to be emceeing the event. I'm excited about the after party as well that I hear all so much about. But nights like that, you know, where we get together and we celebrate the good causes, that must, you know, look, you run this organization. It must, you know, it gives you focus and it must re-energize the troops a little bit too.
I think it definitely does. You know, you mentioned Hope After Dark, which is our after gala experience. You know, for me, it's about how do we bring the community closer. For those individuals, as you said, who might not have the ability or even a desire at this moment to buy a gala ticket that might be a little more expensive, they can touch us and learn about the organization in a very relaxed and informal setting where we get a chance to have a good time, meet other advocates, other supporters, and kind of help us do the work that we do. So we're really looking at ways that we can kind of bring everybody closer to this mission so that we're not living it alone, but we're living it alongside people.
It looks like, I just was at the website now, that online ticket sales may have closed for the general thing. It looks like the After Dark tickets, looks like they might still be available. There are still ways to get tickets, I believe, too, right? If you go to the website, there's more information.
Yes, there is. There's definitely plenty of information. What we are doing also, if people do want to come to Hope After Dark, it is a cocktail reception. People will be, you know, they are having a good time. We will be taking credit card payments at the door if necessary. But if you can get your ticket earlier, it would be a great opportunity for you to come and celebrate, not just with you, John, but with all of us here at One Hope.
And remind people where they can go, obviously, tomorrow night. It's the Hilton.
Yes, Hope in Action, Why I Have Hope Gala, will be at the Hilton Chicago starting at 6 p.m. And then at 10 p.m., Hope After Dark will start, which will be a very relaxed kind of cocktail reception, as I mentioned.
Man, when does that thing end? 10 p.m. it starts? You know, I wake up for my morning show at 3 a.m. How long am I partying till tomorrow night, Charles?
You're actually partying until midnight and going straight to work, John.
Luckily, I have Saturday off, my friend. OneHopeInAction.org is a website you can go to for more information. OneHopeUnited.org, also for more general information about the whole thing. Charles, thanks for your time. And again, thank you so much for your patience today.
All right. Thank you. And I hope everyone has a good day.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but just obviously be advised. Coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Kim Gordon on 720 WGN. No Anna today, Ro. What you got going on?
Well,
is she coming in eventually?
No.
Okay. No. Well, I know Lauren's at a bar. Is she going to the bar?
We have a lot. We've got a lot going on here, okay. John. Things, you know, we are a dynamic situation. Okay. We're all real individuals mm-hmm. who had things happen. Yesterday okay. I had something happen with me. I wasn't able to make the show. Today, Anna's going to be off for a okay. couple of days. It was a death in the family. So
I'm sorry. That's too bad.
And then the kids are at the bar right now.
Right.
They are at I am so jealous. I've never, ever, ever had this moment where I envy all the other people on the show except for me, because they are at Cork Carey at the park, 33rd and Princeton, in the beautiful Bridgeport neighborhood of Chicago.
Yeah, you look lonely in there, Ro.
I am.
You look visibly upset by the fact that all your friends are at the bar and you
right.
aren't.
They're all, and I'm like, I'm at home, I have to work. You know, and it's like the CLTV people are like, you know, you got to do the show. And I'm like, well, why? We just want to go to the bar. And then, the radio people will love it. You know, again, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
You don't have to see us. You just hear us and having the fun. That's the whole idea of the Carnival Wagon. I mean, that's what we do.
So you're just going to be disgruntled up to White Sox then?
So I am. Yeah, actually I am. Because okay. we had a secret plan, John. I can only tell you this. Okay. CLTV just joined us.
Yeah.
That we had this secret plan as Lauren and Kevin are at the bar mm-hmm. right now at beautiful Cork and Carey at the park, 33rd and Princeton. Stop by. CH Vodka is there. They're pouring specialty cocktails with CH Vodka. Another reason, which I love CH,
mm-hmm.
another reason I am a little bit, frosty
jealous,
right now.
Yes.
Yeah. Jelly, as the kids like to say.
Yeah.
And I am, I'm sitting here, and as CLTV now knows, I'm here just for you. I just want to point this out. Where's my camera? I'm here just for you. Otherwise, I'd be at the bar with them. And so we do have important stuff coming up. Ben Bradley's going to join us. That seems less important, but he will be here anyway. And Philip Bump, national correspondent of the Washington Post, explain what's going on now in the big fight in Washington.
We'll have a good, frustrated show then, Ro.
Thanks, John. Really appreciate it.
No problem.